Devices Radio Network.
Blood, Sweat, and Gear is for informational and educational purposes only. Kids, don't try this at home.
You know how you got the 6-piece nuggets? Just, can you give me just 4 nuggets? I'm trying to... Shut up and listen to my order. Take the 6 nuggets and throw 2 of them away. I'm just wanting a 4 nugget thing. I'm trying to watch my calorie intake. Motherfucker Dre, motherfucker Snoop, motherfucker Death Row. Yo, and here comes my left blow. Cause I'm the E-A-Z-Y-E,
and this is the season to let the real motherfucking G's in. Welcome back to Blood, Sweat, and Gear. I'm Scott McDaley, and with me, as always, is Skip Hill, Bob, and S2H. Neither of them are here with us today, but we have a special guest coach with us. We've got Nikki Johnston. You guys know Hello. Dave Johnston really well. What's up, Nikki? How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. So, you know, like I was starting to say, I think everybody who listens to bodybuilding podcasts knows your husband.
Yes, they do.
And I thought they needed to get to know you a little bit better. You've been on Geared Up before, right?
Yes, actually, Adam started a women's show, and I think we did about 3 or 4 episodes together, and then I kind of fell off for a while. So yeah, I had a great time doing that with him. I wish I would have continued, but I just noticed the direction of the show was something that I didn't really want to partake in. And so yeah, I just kind of stopped that and continued on just doing coaching and my own thing.
Well, we are happy to have you. I know that.
Thank you.
When you guys lived in Maryland, you guys did a ton of local competitors there. I know Dave yes. told me that like there were times that it would be like the top 5 was basically all Team Warrior Within people.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we had some shows where David himself brought 20, 30 clients to the show, and we would have posing clinics every Sunday. We had 50, 60 people rolling in there. We had about 15 coaches underneath us that were actually local. David just built a huge culture and following there, and we had a blast. It was so much fun. And, it, you know, we rode that out for, I don't know, we got in there about 2010, and that's when I started competing. But after that, it just kind of elevated from there. So it was a really fun place at the time.
Skip, why don't we build Florida up for you like that? We'll start, like, we'll get you so busy that you're doing posing clinics every weekend, and... I have a feeling you don't want to do that, do you?
No. Here's the thing. You know what it is? I've been in it too long. I'm jaded. And meeting people face-to-face, I want to make sure I word this correctly, is sometimes incredibly disappointing. It's difficult. It really, yeah. In my earlier days, when I was fresh, I could deal with it more. When it's face-to-face, honestly, I prefer the online interaction. Now, that is not to say that I have not met a lot of very good and cool people face-to-face. But when you go to shows, it's a fucking crapshoot. And when you get that many people together, oh, boy.
Oh, yeah.
Good for you. I think that is great that you guys do that. So I don't have to.
We don't actually do it anymore since we've moved. Unfortunately, we don't have the staff anymore at Coliseum to continue the free posing clinics, but I get what you mean. I mean, people put up this facade either on Facebook or even over email. And we would just try to take a simple picture and you could just hear David's voice across the whole entire place, just trying to gather people up together. And it's stressful.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I bet. And, yeah, where was I going to go with this? Oh, yeah, I remember. What I was thinking today was that it would be interesting to get a female perspective. You know, we get a lot of questions that are geared towards men, but then we also do have female listeners. What's been weird to me in podcasting, because I've been doing this for a little while, there's a shutoff that I see. There are certain guys that just don't want to listen to a podcast if there's like a female guest. They just think like, oh, gee, you know, this isn't for me. This doesn't apply to me. And they just don't listen. I don't know why that is. Because mm-hmm. in a lot of cases, I feel like women are working just as hard as men. If not, and I'm not saying this to be like a kiss ass towards women, but I feel like, and Skip, back me up on this. I think in a lot of cases, it's harder for women to get in shape than it is for men. What do you think?
Yeah, I would agree with that. Absolutely. It's a hormone issue. Yeah, I agree. So. That's, I mean, I say it's a hormone issue. That's a pretty blanket statement, but it can be, and it can make it, much harder. I'd agree with that.
Yep. You know, I think there are a few anomalies out there, genetic freaks that can just are already in shape and it's easy to dial them in. But across the board, I mean, trying to get women into shape, especially through the glutes and hams, is a bitch. I mean, you got to throw a little bit of everything at them just to see what sticks. And I mean, we started our competitors really far out just for that fact, because I don't know how they're going to react to certain things, or, you know, you could just have them going balls to the ball training. But if they have that hormone issue and that estrogen's elevated, you're losing the battle there.
Yep. Yeah, that makes sense. Is that the main difference you see between, because I know, Nikki, you work with a lot more females than males.
Yes.
Is that the main thing you see differently, is that women have a harder time getting lean?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, especially my natural clients, you know, I'll throw an ECA stack at them, or DIM, or some kind of estrogen blocker that they can get over the counter just to pull some of the estrogen down so they can start losing the fat and the water weight. But, you know, we're putting, I mean, I don't know how efficacious this is. We're putting, you know, sweet sweat on them and neoprene shorts, anything we can do just to pull and suck in that area. Their upper bodies will be absolutely shredded.
Right.
And then,
right.
You know, their legs will take 3-4 weeks longer. At the same time, when you have a client that comes to you, if they're already, you know, that fat distribution, we have no idea what kind of muscle they have under that fat. So their ass and their legs may not be as muscular as you think. And then you just got to keep going and going and trying to dial them in.
I got a question for both of you guys. And I've heard people talking more about this recently. Do you guys, for both of you guys, do you guys take into consideration the menstrual cycle when it comes to planning someone's diet for the week?
No.
So there's no variation. Okay.
No, I have some females who are very in tune with their bodies. I mean, they know the day they're going to get it. They know how much they're going to gain. They know how they're going to react. They know they're going to have certain cravings. I mean, they have it down to a science. So that feedback is awesome. So if I'll get a specific check-in, say the week before, and they're PMSing, they're like, look, this is where I'm at. This is what happens. So then we can watch out for it every month. But prep is all the same. I mean, if we have some kind of cravings that hit like crazy, I might adjust a little.
Yeah.
But very little. I mean, half the time, menstrual cycles are so all over the place that we just have to guess and just drive right through it.
How about you, Skip?
Yeah, I completely agree. The only thing that I would add is sometimes if you have a veteran or a seasoned competitor, I'd agree they know, you know, the ins and outs, and they kind of predict and they can see it coming and they can feel. Even when you're not going to get your period, you know hormonally that there's been a shift through behavior, mood, hunger, things like that. Yeah, I would agree that the plan itself doesn't need to change, but sometimes you have to remind them that if you have these odd fluctuations, you know, I can't count on both hands how many times I hear in, you know, every few weeks, well, you know, I'm busting my ass and I gained 2 pounds, and well, you're going to have these fluctuations from these hormonal fluctuations. And, you know, like she's saying, it's not always, because it's all over the place, it's not always, but you could have this happen and 3 weeks later or 2 weeks later have the same thing, but yet not have a, I don't want to say full blown period. I'm at a loss for words. Help me out here. But right. Where you're not having the physical, like,
you're still going through the site. The cycle's still happening.
PMS.
Yeah.
Help me out here. Yeah.
No, you're right. You're right. So I'll, like, my periods are very chaotic and I've never been regular, but I will get PMS symptoms. So I'll have a day where I'm just an asshole. And I'm like, oh, that's it. Because it comes out of nowhere and it's a surprise. So you can't time it, but sometimes you'll start to notice that weight gain, or there, if you're doing online coaching, their verbiage is a little bit different. But I'm telling you what, females just go straight dumb. We can't reason with it. We know we have our period. We know what's going to happen, but we see that scale and we're like, I don't care. I don't believe you. It's not coming off. I'm never going to get there. And the whole host of issues after that. So, it's only for a couple of days, but it's just, we seriously go dumb, blind, deaf, everything to it.
I'm going to have to agree, like 100%. And I hate to say it, but I've even worked with girls that'll be like, oh yeah, I'm going to get my period. You know, I'm probably going to be gaining a couple pounds and stuff. So just be ready for that. And then 5 days later, they're like, I gained a couple pounds and I look terrible and this isn't working.
Yep, you know? Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm so fat. You gotta do something. And honestly, when I have my period, it, a lot of the same issues.
No, you all have yours too, so don't even front. You guys have your own periods. Every month, I swear to God, you guys have one.
I agree with that completely.
So what do you think, Nikki? Is there a benefit? To what degree do you think being a female helps you with coaching female athletes?
Oh, man. I think it comes down to being empathetic and... you know, obviously coaching females to females, you have a common bond there. Cause I've been through it. They are going through it. It's just a level of understanding. It's a little bit easier. I think the main problem with it is that I can get too involved I can feel their emotions too much. And then, it kind of throws me off. Like some women, will derail me a little bit. And
I can see that.
I'll have a set plan. I'll be like, this is what we're going to do. And then they're like, no, this is, you know, it doesn't feel right. And, you know, I've caught myself sometimes giving into that and then we'll backtrack and I'll apologize to them. Like, I'm like, look, this is what needs to be done. You got to hang in there with me. You got to believe me because I've been through it too. So I think the overall benefit, even working with men, is just being a little bit more empathetic. I talk a lot more. I'm available. I wouldn't say I'm more available than David. Because David's responses are super extensive, super detailed.
I bet.
But I do a lot of the stuff throughout the week. Like they can ask random questions. So I'm just very much more available in that sense. And I think that it gives a level of bonding there that's a little bit more than, say, maybe a male coach would be like.
Skip, I can't imagine that you ever send out an email to your clients and you're like, if you ever want to talk about your feelings, this is the place.
No, but I'll tell you what. Just open up. I will tell you this, and I think that the large majority of my clients will say that I am involved from a probably more than most when it comes to the emotional aspect and the support and things like that. I do pride myself in getting involved with my clients. And as an example, if they're going to have a meltdown or they're having relationship issues, I don't pry. But at the same time, if I sense that something is up, I'll be an ear. If they need an ear to bend, I will go above and beyond and do that sort of thing. But I would agree too. I think that there are two types of, and there's two types of, you know, guys, different types of guys and women. But when it comes to women, I think that sometimes there are some women who really do need and should work with another woman for that relatable aspect. I really do. And I think that as a woman, I think you need to figure out, do you need that? And I don't want to say relationship, but rapport and your trainer to be relatable and be able to understand and be able to walk in your shoes as another woman. Or, and I use Shelby as an example. Shelby's very good at what he does and he gets great results. Or do you want someone who will just stick to the plan, will not emote, and which is not to say that Shelby does not get involved with his clients. That's not what I'm saying. But just this is right. What needs to be done. Bang, bang, bang. And you have a little bit more of I hate to use this word, but a little bit more distant or a little bit more of a separation, and just tell me what to do and I'm going to execute it, and I'm not going to fucking tell you anything. I'm not going to bitch about it. I'm not going to complain. I think that's the two main things that as a woman you really need to look at when you're looking for a coach, because some people can relate and they want that relatability, and then others just tell me what to do. I know you're good at what I know you'll get there, and just boom, boom, boom.
Yep. Yeah. And I can be that coach both ways. I could take the colder route. And some women love that, you know, and it's a divide, like you said, between the coach and the athlete. Like I have athletes who are just like, no, just tell me what to do. I'm not going to question you. They respond. They say, got it. They have an awesome week. I have other ones that will say, I got it. Blah, 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 blah. And then it'll just steamroll into like everything that's going on with their life, from their menstrual cycle to how much they're pooping to what their kids are doing. And right. I take it all in and I try to tease out what's going on. I mean, I get to the point where I'm helping people schedule their day because they're just so chaotic. And I'm like, okay, what are you trying to do here? And that's just not athletes. I'm talking about just moms who want to get in shape. I'm like, we've got to organize this so you can live your life and still, you know, be a great mom. but also reach your goals. Because if you don't reach your goals, you're not going to be a good mom. You want to take care of yourself. So I run the gamut, you know, of clientele and then how I react to each client. So I'm all over the place.
It sounds like you listen, which is the first and foremost important thing. And then from there, you kind of respond with what that person needs.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely.
Right on. Hey, I've got a bunch of questions. I want to give Skip some shit here in a minute. I think he had a rough weekend with his diet, and I think he needs somebody to hassle him about it. But before that, I had one more question for you. You know, I hear a lot of girls talking about a struggle about maintaining their femininity while using mm-hmm. supplements that it takes to excel, really. At like the higher end of physique sports. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll have women of all age. I have women of all ages on here from 21 all the way up into their mid 50s. It's a hard thing to talk about because now I feel like I'm still very feminine. I know my voice has changed. I don't like that, but you know, I was willing to sacrifice that for my goals. You really have to be strong with who you are before you start the sport, especially if you're getting into gear, because it can really pull you into a bad spot if you're not careful, because it's exciting. You start building muscle fast, you start getting more attention, and then you want to take more, and it's a spiral. And if you're cool with that and it feels good and you're doing your thing and you know you're changing, you know you have acne, you know your voice is changing, you know your clit's 3 inches long and you're fine with that, cool. But wait, do you want to have kids? You're not married yet. You don't even have a boyfriend. I mean, I ask all these questions going into it because I'm very, very safe with what I give my clients, and I start very low. I'm extremely sensitive. I took 2 days of winning my voice drop. I was like, hell no, I'm off this shit.
Yeah.
So I can't take a lot. So I'm very much on the conservative side. But when it comes to femininity, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I feel as I've aged, I feel like I look better. I've gotten sexier. My sex life is better. All the past 20 years of being a woman. So, I think just in my life, I've progressed my womanhood over time. So that's been really cool for other women who, I just try to give them all the side effects and what could happen. And I stop where they need to stop. I dial them back. We stop, you know, we try something else. And, that's where that listening communication comes in. So I warn them right out of the gate, starting real, real low. And you let me know where we can go. So it's, you know, I just really take an individual approach with it.
All right. Well, we've got a bunch of questions today from the Advices Radio forums. And when we get to those, I'm glad you're here, Nikki, because what I want to do is try to take a perspective from, female coach and dealing with females on those questions, you know, where we can. But before we get all to that, we do have some shout outs. But Skip, I heard you didn't stick to the diet this weekend.
You know, I'll tell you, I'm going to preface this with, how do I say this without it making it sound like an excuse?
Yeah, how do you make yourself sound better? That's what you're trying to do right now, isn't it?
No, I'll tell you what it is. It was a very emotional weekend. What had happened was, not only did my dad show up out of the blue, I was doing cardio and here at the apartment complex that my wife runs, and I look down and I see my stepmom, and I'm like, wow, she looks a lot like Helen. And she's waving at me, and my brain isn't registering it because I'm like, what the fuck would she be doing here? And then my dad comes around the corner and my wife, and they're all smiling. I'm like, holy shit, like, what are you doing here? So they kind of surprised us for a long weekend. I thought that was cool. But to add to that, my son came home, my 17-year-old son, called Saturday night and said, you know, I need to come home.
Oh.
And he's been in, for those who don't know, because I don't put everything out there, he had stayed back in Colorado and had been back for 4 months while we had been down in Fort Lauderdale trying to make it on his own, basically, at 17, almost 18, and was fighting and trying to really be resourceful. But at that age, he didn't have a car, and you know, he had to go out and get a job, and he was, you know, trying to find a roommate situation. He was pretty much scrambling, and you know, it's hard, it's difficult to watch when the rest of my kids are down here. So when I got that call, and I'm being very careful because I don't want to turn this into, you know, this emotional type of thing, but it all kind of, and you know, it's funny because I told you that I knew from last year the things that come up when you have, when you're older, when you have a career and you run a business and you know, you're married for 25 years, you got four kids, we up and moved. Yeah. There are some things sometimes that have to take priority. And I knew going into this prep that I had to be ahead and anticipate something.
You did say that.
Yeah. Derailing me. And it just was a very difficult time. I could have stayed on my diet. And in fact, I'll be honest, I probably should have. What I did was I took advantage of the fact that I knew that I was ahead. I was also very overtrained. It was bizarre. About 5 hours prior to them showing up, I had told my wife, I need a few days off. I am so depleted. And when I say days off, I meant from the gym, not, you know, a free-for-all.
Right,
and
right.
I need to recover. And I had made a couple changes to my diet because this, as well as this keto approach has been working, I cannot go no carb and then load. So I made some changes, and you know, when they showed up, I contemplated, I mulled it over, and I did. I decided I'm going to take a few days. I'm going to enjoy my dad being here. And then when I got the call from my son that he was coming back, I mean, we got him a flight 5 hours later.
Wow.
And had to pick him up at 5 o'clock in the morning. I wasn't going to tell my son either, you know, hey, I got double cardio to do today. I got to get to the Tanner and I have to, you know, train for 2.5 hours.
Right. So right. Get a cab.
It all, the timing really couldn't have been better to hit all at once. And at the time that it did, and I understand, and I'm going to say this because I know it needs to be said, there will be some people who will say, you know, that's why I respect you, Skip, you know, family comes first and everything. And I appreciate that. But the reality is I'm also committed to this and I'm locked in to this prep, and I've never been this focused. And some would argue and say, well, you say you're focused, but yet you're going to bail for 3 days. Say what you want. I'm not going to, I don't need anybody's approval for the decision that I made. And I have 11 weeks and I'll be cleaned up in a week. And if I don't make it, everybody can laugh at me, but I'll make it. So it just is what it is. Now, that doesn't mean I'm going into, you know, the show that I was talking about and going to destroy everybody. I said that I am going into a show that is, I don't want to say out of my league, but it's not in my league. Let's put it that way. I'm going in to show what I can do. I'm going in for the challenge of getting back on gear and doing the best that I can. If that means I don't place, great. If it means that I place fifth in the Masters, but I'm in incredible condition, which is really my only real goal, is to prove to myself that I can come back and step on the gas and, you know, still do it. That's really all I'm after. So I'm just trying to reiterate that. If I was chasing a pro card, if I was still in my heyday, you know what? I probably would have been a little bit more narcissistic about it, which I may not have been proud of, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Even if you were to do that at the time and you thought that you're thinking you would have stuck with it, but not have been like happy or okay with that decision to have done that.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I'd have been more likely to. And they were bothered by the fact that I was, you know, pulling away a little bit. But yeah, I told them, I said, that's not your decision. It's mine. And that's what I'm going to do. So when I got the call, like I said, for my son, it just reinforced that, you know, I took 4 days total and everything is back on track. And it just is what it is.
I don't think people are going to hold that. I can't imagine anybody being upset.
You know, my thing is, I just don't give a fuck.
Yeah, I can't even imagine it, man. I can't imagine it. You know, if somebody did feel that way, I feel like they'd just be being a dick, really.
Mm-hmm. Could be.
I would have done the same thing, Skip, honestly. I mean, I have an 8-year-old. I don't have adult children yet, but I couldn't even imagine just putting training ahead of that when you know the situation, you know you've moved, your child's way across the country. Like, I don't know. I would have done the same.
I appreciate hearing that, really. Yeah. To be honest with you. And you're right, Scott. I mean, maybe nobody would say anything, but there's somebody who's thinking, well, I'd have stuck it out because, you know, I'm fucking hardcore. Whatever. It's cool. I'm cool with it. I don't need anybody's approval. Fuck it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you're harder on yourself. That's probably, what it is, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think it would have been a harder decision had I not been ahead.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would have been tough. I was fortunate. I can't even believe the timing. I mean, the timing could not have been any better. Huh. So it is what it is. You know, I'm back on and, you know, I got work to do and I feel pretty confident, very confident actually, that I'm going to be able to, you know, pull it off. It just is what it is. We'll see.
And here, I was setting you up to give you shit about this. I feel bad about it. Now I can't.
You can still give me shit. I mean, I'm still good for it. But it was a very emotionally, and it was good. Don't get me wrong. Yeah, I don't want to make it sound negative, but very difficult on my wife, too. I think as hard of a time as it has been for myself, it has been far more difficult on my wife. The joke in the family is my wife does not cry. She gets mad. But when you see her cry, you know that she's battling. So, but it's good. Everybody's here. You know, like I said, the Hill family is whole, and I think he's glad to be here.
Nice.
And it's good.
Nice. So we got a handful of shout outs here. I put out a thread over at the Advices Radio Instagram page. That's at Advices Radio Network. If you guys want a shout out, we are going to start posting them there. I was doing them on my own Facebook page, and I felt like that just doesn't make sense. So I feel like the Instagram page for Advices Radio is probably the place to be. And our shout outs are here for the episode are the people that posted, and that is Evan Pace, Jake Radcliffe, and Matt Marshall, who's a client of mine, Sergeant Lindsay Eddick, Richard Gutierrez, and Matthew Sellers. I think you know Matt, don't you, Skip?
Yeah, he's a client of mine. Yep, very, yeah. Very cool guy. Yeah.
Where's he out of?
Ooh. I don't know. How bad is that? I can't tell you.
Well, you don't have to know to do his diet, right? I just figured you might know. So, because like the other guys, you've been like, oh yeah, he's out of Australia and stuff. You got a lot of people in Australia, it seems. I don't know why.
Yeah, Australia and the UK. I think when it comes to, you know, international clients, most end up coming from Australia, the UK. A lot of it has to do with the dollar exchange and stuff like that.
That makes sense.
Yeah, they can, you know, they can afford the trainers in the United States, where a lot of those countries, the dollar exchange is so bad.
Yeah,
you know, they sometimes can't.
When I went down to Belize a couple of years ago now, I found a gym that was right on the Guatemalan border, and I met some people there. They were all really cool guys, and they actually kind of had like a small community of people that were really into building muscle. And I've talked to a lot of them since then on Facebook, but I would feel bad even attempting to like try to work with them because the dollar exchange is so bad there. Like their money isn't worth nearly as much as ours. And we're talking, you know, people that are, it's, you know, it's a developing country basically.
Sure.
So it would be a lot harder for them to afford, you know, coaching at US prices. But man, it's interesting. It's interesting when you talk to people in other countries, the different foods that they have. Like I'm working with a guy in Sweden right now, and I had written avocado into his diet, and he had to tell me, he's like, we don't have avocados here. We do, but they're really expensive and they're small and they suck. I'm sure you guys have run into that with different foods around the world.
Oh yeah. Protein sources are kind of funny because you're like, what? You're going to eat kangaroo or you're going to eat horse meat? Like,
yeah.
Y'all eat horses over there? What the fuck? Yeah. It can be a cultural thing that not, you know, many people, if you don't work with clients around the world, it can be kind of surprising. Hell, I picked up, I don't want to say slang. I mean, you know, I hear, you guys have probably done the same thing, but, you know, British type terms that, you know, sometimes I'll slip and use because I'm so used to them. My wife will look at me and go, don't. I'm like, I didn't mean to. I wasn't trying to impress anybody with it. That's just something I hear all the time. It's like, you don't hear that all the time. I'm like, I do. I hear it all the time from my Australian clients.
He's got a knife.
That's not a knife. That's a knife.
So yeah, there's a different, you know, one of the things that I'm not trying to plug, and it's going to look like this, but, you know, I have a Team Skip approved trainer program. I have a handful of trainers that what we're trying to do is kind of capitalize on those countries and those regions or those demographics that the dollar exchange is, there's a pretty big disparity. So as an example, one of my trainers is in South Africa, where the exchange can sometimes be, you know, 14, 15, 16, 17 to 1. Hmm. So they can't, someone from South Africa may not be able to hire me, but they can work with one of my trainers, and especially someone who is there in South Africa, and be able to drop those fees considerably and be able to move, you know, I call it my brand or my name, to an area that is relatively untapped outside of just local trainers.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea. And I tell you, it's a good thing too. I see people like Jason Theobald and even Phil Viz to some degree. He's been doing it a little bit longer, but to see Jason and some of these guys start to have this type of a program where they're transparent, that they have trainers under them that can do work. This has been going on for a while, but it hasn't been completely transparent with some people. Hmm. And I don't think that's very fair. If someone calls a trainer or contacts a trainer and wants to work with them, if they're not getting that information or their plan and their updates and adjustments from that person, they need to know that. That just seems fair to me. And that has been going on for a long time. And it's been a huge bone of contention with me personally. That's me being old and bitching about things that a lot of people don't bitch about, but I don't like things like that. So there's that transparency, and to be able to see these other trainers do that, I think it helps people across the board because it makes it easier for them to figure out who is, for lack of a better word, approved, who knows this shit, who has the credentials, so that they don't have to sift through or wade through this, I call it the sea of turds, to try to figure out who they're going to waste their money or who they, you know, may have to gamble with by paying money and get nothing out of. Yeah. So I'm really happy to see that is the trend and that, you know, a lot of well-known trainers are starting to do that now.
Yeah. And Nikki, you and David kind of work together. I mean, if you needed help with a client, he'd probably jump right in and give you thoughts too, wouldn't he?
Oh, absolutely. So like anytime I have an issue with a client, I'll ask David and I'll tell them like, look, let me ask David first. Let me confirm this is what we want to do and this is the best route for you. And even with our other trainers, like I would never have me myself pose as a, have another trainer pose for me. Mm. Like, they're their own, like we have Derek Natcher and Silda's fiance and a couple others, like they're their own coaches, but they're under, you know, Team Warrior Within, just like Skip's doing. Like I couldn't imagine having that South African coach and saying him answering that it's me. Like, I think that's shady to me. I would never, I don't like that because it's just such a personal thing. Like you're getting to know someone else. It's, you know, if the verbiage is different like that, wait, Skip wouldn't say that type thing. Like, you know, it kind of catches them off guard.
Yeah, right.
Right.
All right. Well, let's take a quick commercial break. And when we get back, we've got a bunch of questions next week or next episode, 2 weeks from now. If you guys want shout outs, go to @AdvicesRadio and we'll put together another contest by then, too. So I think the contest thing went good, Skip.
Hey, I've got protein over here.
You got protein?
I got Elite FTS gear, t-shirts, training straps, wraps that I am happy to contribute. So you and I will have to discuss that off air and see if I can't help to contribute to some of these these contests as well.
That sounds good. Guys, we will set up another contest for the next episode. So stay tuned at the Instagram Advices Radio page. We will be back in a minute.
If you've enjoyed S2H's contribution to Blood, Sweat, and Gear and would like to learn more, reach out to his team at advancedtrainingtech.com. No matter what your goals are, if you're heading to the pro stage or just want a recomp, feel free to register at advancedtrainingtech.com. Team S2H will be available to educate and inform members as to what plans would best fit their needs, or just hang out and interact at the forums free of charge. That's advancedtrainingtech.com. Team Skip has been synonymous with bodybuilding conditioning for the last two decades. From NFL players to professional bodybuilders, to 40-something guys that just want to kill it in the gym and their shirt sleeves. If you have too much skin, call Skip. TeamSkip.com, because skin is overrated. Hey guys, Scott McNally here.
And this is VJ Peary.
You guys know us from here at the Advices Radio Network. Well, we also have another show, Bodybuilding Nerds Radio. We've got everything from supplement reviews
to shout outs,
listener questions,
and of course, our weekly bodybuilding podcast reviews.
So check us out every Friday.
Or whenever you feel like cooking or doing your cardio or basically wasting time with us.
You can hear us at bodybuildingnerds.com.
Also on iTunes. Bodybuilding Nerds, it's time to get nerdy. In the park, picking every
mark that was out at the dark. Stick them for the loop, cut them up, then I dash. All right, guys, welcome back to the show. Blood, Sweat, and Gear, part of the Advices Radio Network, presented by TeamSkip.com and by Proxy Intense Muscle. You like that, Skip?
I do.
All right. Skip's trying to eat in the background, you guys. You didn't know that. He's being all incognito. He wasn't. I know he just took a bite. I said that, and he's like, "Oh shit! I just took a bite."
I know. I'm like, "I got to lean in. I got to lean in."
You're on a diet though, man. You got to do what you got to do. If it's time to eat, there's no qualms about it, man. I don't care. You got to stick to the diet no matter what. If people come in town, if you're on a pot, oh, sorry.
You just do what you have to do.
All right. So Nikki Johnston's with us. And we are going to start up with the questions over at the Advices Radio Forum. You can go to forum.advicesradio.com or just go to advicesradio.com and click on the forum section. In the bodybuilding part, there is sticky threads for all the shows. And you can check out Blood, Sweat, and Gear there. Ask your questions and we shall answer them. Recently on Advices Radio, there was talk of finding the right compound for you. For the sake of discussion, let's say a guy has taken test-only cycles as far as he can. How should you go about deciding what compound is next? Is trial and error the only way to find out? Have any wisdom on the matter? Thanks, guys. Great show. I listen to every episode, and this is from a guy who's calling himself Special K. So here's my thought. We'll go to you on this one first, Skip, because I want to hear what you have to say. And when we go to Nikki, I think that this is one of those types of questions that we can kind of translate this into what would a female do too? Because
sure.
I hear all the time, and actually, you know what, Skip, you keep eating. Let's just go straight to Nikki on this one.
Awesome.
Yeah, I hear all the time, you know, girls say, well, I've taken Anavar a couple times and, you know, well, what do I do next? And there isn't a ton of information on the boards and there isn't a ton of information online for females and compounds and how, you know, they should do stuff. You just hear, you know, just extreme stuff. Either you don't do anything at all or, mm-hmm. you know, you take everything under the sun.
Yep.
How would you go about talking about this when it comes to females?
Yeah, Anavar is always that first go-to compound that I have my females on. I start them off real slow. I mean, I probably wouldn't have them going over 20 milligrams a day. If they felt that they had taken that drug as far as they could go, I'd actually go to injectables next. And I just go by my own experience, just because, you know, I will say, okay, maybe we can try Winstrol. But that's usually not my go-to because I know how harsh that was for me. So I just kind of hesitate giving that to somebody else. But again, I'm open to letting them try it if they like it. But I like Anavar just because it's processed by both the kidneys and liver. So the stress there is kind of evened out across a couple organs. Winstrol, I'm not too sure about, but I do believe it's a harsher compound. So the next one I'd actually go up to would be either Pirobolan or Masteron. Okay. Both those are two DHT compounds. I do know that Masteron is a little bit harsher than Primo. However, I take Masteron a lot better than Primo.
Okay.
Primo was the one that blew me up, like in a good way. I started with Anavar. I went to Primo after that. And I mean, I think I gained like 30 pounds of muscle on that shit. It was
You're
amazing.
Kidding.
Oh my God. No, I mean, my genetics are pretty decent, especially my upper body. And I grew and I ate and I was fat and it was awesome. it was the best off season. I mean, I can't even tell you how awesome it was, but there came the voice. The voice was the hardest one for me. And especially like, you know, I'm in the, you know, Raven's in the backseat and we're singing and I'm like croaking and it just sounds really bad. And that was the only thing that really, really got to me when I first started. So so Primo is usually the next one. And I've had a few people try Master on. I've even taken tests, like very, very, very small microdoses of it. And that's what I've been doing with my clients. And I don't have them in tests. But if we were to do Primo or Master on, I'd actually have them use an insulin syringe to microdose it to keep their levels just like, you know, you would your blood sugar just every day or every other day, take a little bit each day. Because I just don't want them to have that big bolus. And then you have to wait the whole week. And then I don't know how their body's going to accept that. So, I'll start them off with maybe 5 milligrams of Primobolan and have them take it daily or every other day. And then I would actually, depending on how good they were with Anavar and their side effects, I'd probably actually have them stack it right away. And just compound it and see how they feel. Cause when you're dealing with any kind of drugs, especially like blood pressure, whatever, they tend to add more than one compound because the side effects just go up and up and up the higher the dosage. So if you're adding like 3 or 4 blood pressure medications versus the one, they all work in conjunction with each other and you get the least amount of sides. So at least having a few that are, you know, lower dosages that can work together works great.
That makes sense.
I don't do anything beyond that. I've personally used NPP before and EQ stacked. I do have one client on that. It works great for her. It's interesting. I have a few like just horses that can just take just about anything.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I dose. I'm like, okay. Warning you. But she's older and doesn't care and she's still feminine and her voice isn't super deep. And I'm like, all right, let's do it. So I have a few outliers there, but it pretty much doesn't go beyond Anavar Primo for me.
And you feel like you can basically, you've been able to do everything you need to with your clients without having, because that's the thing. I think people know, well, there's like 100 other steroids available.
Right.
And they think that they need to keep taking different things.
Nope. Yeah. I mean, it's like train hard and eat right. You're going out eating Twinkies. Okay. That's the problem. Like you've got to break it down and find what the basic problem is. All right, well, maybe you're not training hard enough. Let's get some videos. Let me see your toughest set. It's not the gear. And everything out there, they see someone going from fat to shredded, and they don't see anything in between or how hard they put into it or how many years. And I mean, social media has really jacked up their heads in that regard. They want to get there tomorrow.
Yeah.
And, you know, I started in 2010 and, you know, peaked in 2016. It didn't happen overnight. I've been lifting since I was 14.
Yeah, and people don't see that when they see you just make one post, right?
Right, right, absolutely. So I just try to educate as much as possible. And if it's not the gear, then it's got to be something else. And we troubleshoot to find out. And then, of course, there goes, you know, your estrogen blockers. I'll use Novadex. And I'll use E-Block by Pride Nutrition, I believe it is. And either one of those seems to work pretty well. Towards the end. Yep.
Right on. That's a great answer. Skip, where are you at, man? So, you know, this guy, he starts with test only and he's trying to decide on his next compound. He's looking for some wisdom as far as, you know, how can he find what's going to work for him? Is there anything outside of trial and error for him to be able to come to that conclusion?
Well, there's social media that basically says you've tried tests. Now you need to go to, you know, 5 or 6 mil of Tren
every week.
Or, see, and I'm a big test guy, and I know that I get the old guy label for that. I did when I posted my cycle when I went back on for this show. Oh, my God, it's just so much testosterone. Aren't you worried that you're like, blah, blah, blah.
Right. You're not going to be able to get dry, bro.
Yeah, exactly. You're just going to be a, you know, puffer fish, and why would you do that when you could run? I really like to hear her say first, and I don't want to get off on too much of a tangent, but I think it's important to hear a woman talk about dosages for women and talk about responsible testosterone use, EQ. I love that. And really what it comes down to, I think that the compounds themselves get such a negative connotation. There's such this black and white, oh my God, women should not take that. When in reality, the large majority of the time, the bigger issue is the dosing, much more so than the compound. And I'm really glad to hear that, because I think that testosterone for women is still really important. Now, going back to, you know, this guy's question about guys, if he has run a test cycle, I'm a very boring, predictable, rudimentary, basic, whatever you want to call it, planner, or my protocols are basic when it comes to off-season type gaining. I don't really believe that it takes a lot of gear or this very, you touched on this earlier with hundreds of, you know, compounds out there. People want to try everything. They just, this one might work so much better. The reality is that the compounds that you're using are essentially going to put you in an environment to help aid in growth.
Perfectly okay? said.
You're already in a surplus of calories, which people don't give enough credit to when it comes to growth. So if you have a surplus of calories, your training is efficient, it's maximized, your recovery is good, then the gear obviously, you know, can add to that. So going from testosterone to, I'm very simple, add an NPP. I'm not a huge fan of DECA because I'm not a huge fan of compounds that just blow you up with tons of water. I think that there are health components there that if you can make, and I'm using the word cleaner, maybe it's not the best word, but cleaner gains without adding a ton of water, then do that, because it will help to keep your blood. And I understand there are other aspects where, you know, yes, higher estrogen, you know, slightly higher estrogen, it can be beneficial for growth and IGF. I get that. I understand that. But assuming that you're going to be in it for the long haul, and I think everybody should assume that whether they're going to or not, because what can happen is you can think, oh, I got a 5-year plan, and then you find out 30 years later that you've been in it for 30 years, you're going to be happy or glad that you focused on a little bit more on health than just throwing everything at your plan and just trying to get huge without any thought of any type of consequence.
Yep.
So try not to hold any more water than you need to. So I tend to lean toward the NPPs instead of the DECAs. I love EQ. I just think that it is an excellent compound. I'm not big on orals in the off season unless you can cycle them in kind of a four-on, four-off fashion. I would almost love to take credit for the trend of that, but I'm not that arrogant. I'm close, but I'm not that arrogant. I see a lot of people doing that these days, and I've done that for 6 or 7 years, and I feel it's the best way to incorporate orals into your off-season without it really fucking up your blood panel and really causing a lot of size, because about the time that you start to build, you know, your liver enzymes start to climb, your RBCs, hematocrit start to climb, you're coming off. And when you're only on 4 weeks at a time and then you come off, there doesn't seem to be this dramatic weight gain and then weight loss, weight gain and weight loss. There's more of a steady, it's not a straight line, but there's more of this steady wave, I guess, where you can capitalize on the gains without necessarily jump into this, you know, boiling pot of side effects. And again, dosing, you know, dosing is huge. I'm a huge fan of Anavar, even for guys. I think it's the gold. It's like the golden steroid. If and maybe it's just me, but I had a lot of feedback from other clients who said the same thing over the years. The contractile force, your muscles just feel like they're going to knot up. They contract so hard. They feel like they're going to rip from the bone. They're contracting so hard in strength. It's just an excellent compound. So if he's saying, hey, what to take next, NPP or EQ,
okay,
I would say go to that. And I'm not a big dosing guy. I mean, if you're going to run 500, you know, 400 to 500 mega tests, I'm assuming he was in that area. Did he mention what he took for that dosage?
He didn't say dosage.
So let's just assume it was 400 to 500. You could throw in a 300 to 400 EQ dose. That's going to be a pretty good addition that you should still be able to capitalize on. It should make or have an impact on your gains, provided everything else is in order. And that is a huge caveat. Your recovery has to be good. You have to, you know, make sure you're not overtrained, sleep and nutrition's good. You do that, you're going to minimize your sides. You should not have these dramatic sides either from estrogen, you know, blood pressure, things like that. So I think that's a safe second step if that's the way he's going to go.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. That sounds like good advice to me. I'm going to move on. Gears of War says, my bicep finally gave out. I got a partial tear on the inner bicep head at the shoulder. The doctor told me to take ibuprofen, ice, and rest it for a week in a sling, then go back in for reevaluation. I was wondering if any of you have any protocols to increase recovery time. Now, this question he posted right after the last episode, so it's been about 2 weeks now. I'm sure that he's already been back. I'd love an update, by the way, Gears of War, if you want to post on the board and let us know what's going on with it, man. And I'd be interested to hear what's happened. Nikki, have you ever torn a muscle?
I don't think so. I have a left shoulder thing going on, so I'm afraid to get it looked at.
Yeah.
So, but technically speaking, no, I've never, I've strained muscles, but I've never torn anything. I've never had surgery for muscle tears or injuries either. So, I'm out of realm with that. I do know that there are some peptides or injectable peptides that are pretty awesome for injuries. And I would imagine if he's not natural, that gear itself would actually help to get recovery, or even something like maybe growth hormone. But outside of that, I really, my knowledge kind of stops there.
All right. How about you, Skip? What are your thoughts here? Anything out of the ordinary? Anything different than the doctor is suggesting here? Ibuprofen, rest, sling, and ice.
Yeah, I mean, if it's a partial tear, yeah, it depends on essentially how bad the injury is. You know, my fat ass pulled a bicep when I was doing chins at 260 pounds 15 years ago. And because I was doing chins, I had the added benefit of hearing it rip in my ear. That was awesome. Yeah, it was awesome. I actually thought it was worse than what it was. Went through the x-ray because they won't do an MRI until they do a waste your time with an x-ray, waste your time and money and the insurance's money and everything else.
Right.
And it really, I was lucky that it wasn't that bad. I've been very fortunate too, outside of my lower back issues, I have not had major injuries over the years, probably in part because I'm just not terribly strong. You know, it's kind of funny. When you have major injuries like that, it's when people are usually pretty damn strong. I'm just averagely strong. So I have been fortunate. I don't have a lot of experience in that. I will say, if it is a partial tear, I don't think that advice is, it doesn't send up any red flags. It's not something where I would go, oh shit. Now, if he went to a doctor and the doctor diagnosed it and the doctor had no clue and it's actually worse than a minor tear, you know, you got to wonder, what level is he at? What type of an impact will this have on his, you know, if he looks at his bodybuilding endeavors as a career, will he regret not looking into it more because it's going to dramatically change the shape of that muscle moving forward? If my income and my livelihood was based upon my physique and I was going after a pro card or I was likely to get one, I damn sure would have gotten a second opinion ASAP, because the quicker those are fixed, especially if they're not minor, the better chance you have of a much more aesthetically pleasing look to that muscle.
Good point.
Because what it'll do is it'll just reattach itself wherever it is. And if your arm is in a sling, you can imagine, you know, going to attach wherever it attaches, and you're not going to have the same look. Now, if it is minor, he's probably fine. The bitch of it is like you said, it's been 2 weeks. So he's probably, you know, he's probably stuck with the advice he got from his doctor. I'm going to assume, because he's listening to the show, our average listeners are not chasing pro cards, and not their livelihood is not based on their physique for the next, you know, 20 years. So I would say that if it is a minor tear, that's probably good. I think he's probably getting it's more likely that he's getting good advice and that probably will, he'll probably be okay with, you know, the anti-inflammatories and resting it. The question then becomes, and this is what threw up a red flag when you read the question or read his situation. He almost sounded like he knew it was inevitable. Like he was continuing to, like he said it finally. And it's like, oh shit. So you had all these signs. Mm-hmm. You didn't kick back. So that brings me, and I know I understand I'm being presumptive, but I think I'm safe with this one. He's probably going to want to come back earlier than he needs to come back and work. So what happens is you go into the gym, you train light, you're like, oh yeah, I'm good. And then within a week, he's pounding back and biceps again and putting that tear, putting himself in a very vulnerable position for what could be something major.
That's a good point. You know what I'll point out? Go ahead.
I was going to say, if anything, just get on YouTube and start doing some rehab and stay off of it for a little bit longer. Because, if you go in and you're feeling good and you think it's all good and healed, you're going to just snap it right off.
Right. Yeah. When in doubt, go longer.
I was going to mention, as far as the peptides go, I've been dealing with this shoulder thing for some time. And basically, it's the bicep tendon. And what my therapist has told me is that it gets out of the groove. There's a groove where that bicep tendon, goes mm-hmm. down across the shoulder, and it gets kind of popped out of the groove. Once she put me back in place, I immediately was able to press again. I couldn't do dumbbells for about 4 years, maybe. And at all. I couldn't do barbell before that. And then it got to the point where dumbbells just weren't working. I could only use machines and it had to be very specific angles and very controlled. And once she worked on me, I was back in the gym and I pressed the 90s the first day. It blew me away because the strength is still there, because it's not as if I quit training my pecs, but I couldn't do dumbbells anymore. The stability and everything, it was too much. So now I'm back in the gym. And I'm training hard again on chest using dumbbells. I still get soreness. And what I found is BPC 157, there's no question in my mind, it's definitely helping with inflammation. Because that's been the main issue for me, is that I start pressing, I have a good workout, and then, oh shit, my bicep's sore. The bicep tendon is sore again. It can last a week, and then 5 days, I'm back in the gym again, I'm training, and then I make it worse, and I make it worse. What I found now is if I irritate it a little bit and then I use the BPC for a few days, it instantly drops the inflammation back down. When I first started using BPC, I thought that it was going to be this thing where I would run a course of it or a cycle of it, and it was going to then repair the injury and I would be healthy again and, move on with life. And I'm seeing that it's not that way. The longer I'd used it, the less effective it seemed to become. But for small spurts, like a week at a time, it seems to be really beneficial for me. And I can instantly feel the pain reduce a lot quicker than it would have otherwise. So I'm definitely going to stick with this stuff, and I'm going to keep using it just short term. And I'm doing a little bit higher than what they suggest, on the message boards and stuff, and what I've heard people say, more 600 micrograms a day. And I'm pretty much just doing it in one shot usually, but I'm going to swear by it, Skip. If you ever have an issue, I want you to pick this stuff up and tell me what you think.
I'm not going to knock the fact that you're down with BPC.
Yeah.
What I am, you know me. Really, cause I can, yeah. Hey, I know you. What I will say is this, I think that by nature, as bodybuilders, we tend to, when we get into a bind like this, instead of taking the time to recover, we look more for what can I take to, and I'm not knocking you for this, don't get me wrong, because I've had the same type of mentality that I've had to fight it. But I just think that it's kind of Band-Aid therapy when, just like you said, it doesn't always help. And I tend to, and this is, again, the fact that I'm old and I've been around a long time, rest, even though it's the last thing we want to do, is the most reliable and honestly the most logical, if I'm being honest, way to deal with inflammation. It's just the last thing that we want to do. So, these itis issues or inflammation, especially when we're overtrained and we're trained too frequently, and it happens a lot for shows, and it's difficult to pull back for shows, I get that. But when you're in the off season, you've got that time, and if you get into an off season, especially if it's early, and you find yourself battling something that is inflammation related for 4 or 5 months, those 4 or 5 months probably what could have been negated if you would have taken, and I say you, anybody, me, yeah. anyone, mm-hmm. you know, a couple weeks. And then, sure, that couple weeks, it would suck to not train direct, like any exercise that are going to directly impact that area. But those 2 weeks would be behind you 2 months later and 4 months later and 5 months later instead of this nagging issue. And I think other people, too, need to understand, as well versed as we are with gear and nutrition and everything else, you'd be surprised. I know I have found myself surprised that, especially with bicep injuries, whether it's tendonitis, people tend to not understand. They're like, well, I'll just train legs. But you have to hang on to handles on a leg.
Yeah, you do.
You have, you know, and when you train chest, when you do, I mean, it, you know, there's a lot of shit that is going to continue to potentially irritate that area, even if you're not training chest or, well, chest, back, biceps, you're going to continue to irritate it. So I guess what I'm getting at is I still believe that even though it can be beneficial, I think it's still a better option to still look hard at just the recovery and taking, mm-hmm. you know, a week to try to stay away from that and let that inflammation subside.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think we just need to focus on preventive care. I mean, I think that's just our society in general are always trying to diagnose and fix after instead of prevention. But even that, if you know something is nagging and you're feeling something give away, just to be proactive in stretching more, or, you know, we're great at the diet, we're great at taking supplements, but we're not great at stretching before and after we work out. We're not great at doing shoulder rehab in between, you know, chest day. We're terrible at that. We're tight. We're sore. It's unfortunate because we're doing the cardio, we're doing the training. The day gets so long, then we're making our meals. But looking down the road 15, 20 years later, you still have a labrum, you still have a knee joint. You know, if you're taking the time to stretch and to just do preventive care, I think that'll last a lot longer too. And we have to worry about taking other products to, you know, fix everything that's happened afterwards.
That's that take another drug mentality. That's all I'm trying to fight. Yeah.
I follow absolutely. You. I follow what you're saying, Skip. I do. I guess that this is something I've been dealing with for years now, and no matter what I do, it's always there. And between going to therapy for the shoulder when needed, and then if things, because I can have a successful chest workout without that irritation, but once I get the irritation, that's when, like in the past, it's derailed me, where then no matter what I do, it's just going to continually be a problem no matter what. And now I found that with all that other stuff, adding this in has been of benefit. But I still hear you, man.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, I couldn't even imagine not training chest for that long. Like, I love training chest. So, I mean, I would have done the same thing. Like, I would have injected whatever I needed to do to get popped out or whatever to be able to train that body part. So if you're at a last-ditch effort and that helps, like, by all means. But, you know, what I was saying before was just to, you know, just watch for those things as they come up and try to do preventive care. But sometimes things happen and shoulder goes or, you know, tendon flies off, and then you just got to do what you got to do.
For me, it's been this FST therapy that it blew my mind. Like I said, I was able to go back in and press with zero pain the next day, which it was literally years. So I obviously that's not going to apparently help this guy. You know, this is a muscle tear, but
right.
Anyway, I'll move on down the list here. We had another question, and this is in regards to orals pre-contest. Langstrand 1. He says, question for all three of you. Apparently that means Nikki, Skip, and myself, because
that's
Scott,
right.
I don't know where Scott is, by the way, Skip.
He's in jail. He's probably fucking in jail.
You're right. You're probably right. Question for all three of you. What is your preferred pre-contest orals? 6 weeks out from a bodybuilding competition, and why? Thanks, guys. Been listening to the show since you guys first started. Always great information and entertaining.
I'll go to you on this one, Skip. I know you're not an Oral fan, but I know that contest prep, you know, the end of it is probably the only time where you make a concession to that on a well, I know you use them in the off season or you don't mind them, like you said, 4 weeks on, 4 weeks off. But when we get to a contest, what's your thoughts?
I am a fan of Oral, and I'll just leave it at that. Okay, I just want to be crystal clear. No, you know, I am, you know, I'm obviously pro-oral during prep. And one of the main reasons is because I think it's difficult to hold. Let me say this. While you're on the orals, great benefits. You know, you can change your look and you know, you get the look. It's just it's a completely different look. When you come off, you lose it. It's just different than injectables. So that's why I tend to lean towards the orals for you know, prep over the off season. You really only care what you look like when you step on stage, and then when you're done and you stop the orals and you can't hold everything, then who cares, because you're not being judged anymore. I'm just a big fan. I'm just a huge, huge fan of Anavar and Winstrol. I think that they both complement each other quite well. Winstrol tends to, or can beat up, you know, tendons. I hate to use the word brittle because it's used for so long, but at least it's a term that people can relate to. Anavar has cross strengthening properties for tendons, and I think that that's huge. So between the two, I just think that they're both great. Winstrol obviously can counter the effects of Tren for people who might be sensitive to prolactin, not as much as it being a true prolactin compound, but it can still certainly help. The fact that Anavar doesn't aromatize, and I say it doesn't aromatize, I have to be careful with that, because there are some women, predominantly women, who will take it and they just blow up. And it's an odd thing, and I sometimes have to question whether they actually got true Anavar, but there have been so many situations where I know clearly, and they know clearly, that they did have Anavar, and they just do not respond very well to it. But it doesn't happen very often. So I think that my go-to is Anavar and Winstrol. I am not a fan of halotestin. I think that halotestin makes little to no difference other than turning someone into a ginormous asshole for the last 2 to 3 weeks before a show. It is incredibly hepatotoxic, and I don't personally see the benefits. I see it more as a compound that people think they have to take those last couple weeks before a show, and if people want to use it, great. I've used it, I have not used it, and I have not noticed any difference with conditioning, hardness, or anything else. That's just me. And I've done the same with clients, and they don't see the difference either. So, not a big fan. You know, if you're going to throw Anadrol in, you know, I used Anadrol at the start of this prep and I absolutely loved it, but I hadn't used it in 15 years. It helped to blunt my appetite especially when I was running that DNP cycle, which I put those two together for that reason. Anadrol usually takes people's appetite down to nothing.
Yeah.
But it's also going to make most people hold water. So unless you're going to, I think it's better to use it at the start of a prep and then switch over to other compounds like Anavar and Winstrol, unless you're going to use it within the last 24 to 36 hours to help with fullness. It can help. I don't know that it's enough to really say, okay, yeah, I definitely noticed a difference. But I have seen enough of a change in enough physiques that I'm going to use it for the first time myself for this show, just to see what I can see and how it works for me.
All right. So, Nikki, I kind of have a side question here for you. Skip was talking about people not responding well to Anavar. I've seen this happen more than once and I've been pretty sure that it's been real Anavar. I've seen women that have bloated from it. Is this uncommon?
For me, yes. But you know what? That just made me think of something. I'm working with a female now, and I think that might be our issue.
Really?
So I had never heard of that before, the Anavar and having a negative reaction in someone. I think that actually might be it. So she actually just got off a cycle. We'll see, like maybe 2 weeks ago. So we'll see how she does as she continues prep. And I might not be able to put her back on it. So yeah, I think she's the only one that I might actually have an issue with. So other than that, everyone's loved it, had no issues. Some have the only issue that other issue I've had is it not being strong enough.
Oh.
But that particular person just loved being on shit. So she just jumped right up to something stronger. But nope, I love it. I think Anavar is great.
So pre-contest, I assume, you know, like you said, Anavar is the place that you start with females.
Yep.
If that's what they were using for their off seasons and doing well with that, I assume that this is basically what you would use then too during the show.
Yep. I try to cycle it enough so that they can come off of it, get labs done, make sure everything looks good. For the women that don't have normal periods, I do have them give blood work. Just with the prevalence of heart disease in women, and we just don't have those same symptoms that males have, I just don't want to be too cautious. And if you get birth control in there, birth control has really serious side effects, clotting and all that stuff.
Mm.
I don't play around with my women. So I just make sure that they're either have regular periods or they're giving blood and then taking supplements to, you know, for kidneys and for liver.
Okay. I've got a question here that is specifically for our show, and it was asked to you, Nikki. I'm going to see if I can pull it up. This was on Instagram, and this is by Jackie Gwynn. She is a bikini competitor. I met her down at the Arnold this year. She's competed a few times this year, and she's doing really good. She says, some individuals consider this a highly serious situation. Others consider it a normal occurrence for female athletes. How concerned should a coach be for an athlete that loses their period for long periods of time? How should an athlete approach the long-term effects while keeping their long-term fitness goals a priority as well? Are there options using proper supplements that can be applied to aid in this? I guess, and she does write more here, but I can get where she's going here. I can get what she's saying. So basically, you know, she's wondering if having her period stop, is this a big concern? It sounds like something that, you know, you've probably had to deal with a lot. And is there any type of supplementation that you're familiar with that could return this to normal? Is there anything you could take, I guess, as part of what she's asking, or what should she do?
When it comes to menstrual cycle, we'll just go from a natural perspective. Going back to 2008, so Dave and I just got married. I got off the pill right away. I had one normal period, and I didn't have a period again for 2.5 years. I got pregnant that November. I have been so irregular. I didn't even have a period before conceiving my child. So what I had to do is actually go to the doctor. He gave me progesterone. I don't even know if that was what worked. All I know that I was pregnant, you know, maybe a couple of weeks after. So I'm assuming that's what did it.
Hmm.
So it's really hard to tell. Like amenorrhea is very common. It's common among any kind of female athlete with lower body fat. I've had women who have been extremely lean and get their periods all the way through prep. No issues. So it's very individual situation. I don't think it's a big deal. I've actually had a gynecologist tell me you don't really need periods. So it's more of a, you know, for conceiving and for procreating. So outside of that, I don't believe there's any supplementation that can actually get you to start it. I love DIM. I think it's a great product in controlling estrogen balance, and that could possibly help. But other than that, I have no idea. I don't think it's extremely negative. I do think that getting leaner and contest prep and keeping to specific foods all the time messes with digestion.
Yeah.
I know that when I get my period, my digestion's messed up. And when I'm off, it gets regular. I'm not sure if that's estrogen balance or what hormones affect that specifically. But it's, I don't think there's anything to worry about. If you feel good, your labs are good, and the only thing that's off is that you're not actually bleeding, you know, if you're getting PMS symptoms, I don't think it's a problem. I really don't.
Okay.
In the scope of getting pregnant, in the scope of being, you know, a woman or, you know, menopause, if you're getting regular care and you're getting your, you know, your luteinizing hormone, your progesterone, your estrogen, your testosterone tested periodically, and those are coming out normal, I don't think there's anything else that you could really, really do for that.
Okay. Fair enough. I'm going to go back to the board here and this question. We have a bunch of questions here, so I don't think we're going to be able to get through all of them today. If we don't, then we will cover them the next week. So thank you, everybody who's been participating on the boards. I really appreciate it. Hi, blokes. That tells me that he must be from the UK, huh, Skip?
I like that.
He says, love your work. I'm one of the weirdos that listen to all your podcasts. He says, I live in Western Australia. So I've been far away from, he says, so I'm about as far away from you guys as possible. My question is that my wife, who is 38-year-old physique competitor, she gets really defined, possibly too much in her upper body, but struggles with her bum and legs. She has really well-developed legs, but struggles to strip them down. Her diet and training are on point, but I assume it is something else. We followed some advice from you guys and ran 30 milligrams per week of test probe. I don't think we actually gave them that dose, but
I don't think so either.
for her last cycle and had great results. I have learned from a few other ladies that they run heaps of Nobeldex and Aromasin coming into a competition, but I'm worried that this may create some health issues. I would love to hear your opinions on what is happening here and what you have had success with for your lady competitors. Let's go to Nikki on this one first, because I think this was tailored for you.
Mm-hmm. Sure. I've never heard of taking test prop just for legs in general. I have used test prop and I love it. And to kind of buttress back on the other question, like, testosterone is in our body anyway. So I don't understand, as you guys mentioned, why testosterone gets such slack in the female community. We already have it. We get it when we're, you know, we have our own HRT. We get testosterone. We get pellets. I mean, it's all testosterone based. So I think it's a great product if used right. Again, I've never heard of you just specifically using test prop just for that. I would imagine if she's willing to use that, why wouldn't she use Novadex or Aromasin? You don't need to take butt loads. I mean, you can take, you know, 10 to 20 milligrams a day for 6 to 8 weeks out. And I imagine that would go great with her other gear usage. That's generally what I have for my clients that are on gear, that I'll have them take Novadex. I don't touch Aromasin, which I believe is a little bit heavier than Novadex. But Novadex seems to work very, very good. And you had to find out, well, you know, she is 38, she is older. Does she have injuries? How muscular is her lower body relative to her upper body? And how big does she get in the off season? I would get really fat in the off season. So you'd imagine how long it would take me to actually get lean to be able to have my hamstrings and my glutes come out. Which I never actually accomplished until my last prep, which was in 2016. So it took me that many years. Yeah, it was great getting heavy for building muscle, but it sucked ass for dieting. So if she doesn't have the requisite muscle, it just might be that. Like, I don't know. I'd have to see her to really understand what her body's doing. So it sounds like she gets lean, great upper bodies, which most women do. But I'd say, you know, run Novadex last 6 to 8 weeks, you know, 10 to 20 milligrams, see how she does. And then, you know, slowly wean her off afterwards, just because post-contest and eating and all that estrogen, you don't want the estrogen to flood back because you're just going to hoard fat really bad. So that's all I got for that one.
And I mean, part of this might even be diet too, right? I mean, they pushed hard, but do you feel that you have to push harder? Like maybe she looked great up top. But right. You might have to push beyond that to the point where she's flattening out, right? In order to get those legs to come in.
Oh, yeah. I mean, at the end of my last prep, I was down to like 800 calories a day. Like, you got to push it. I mean, like I said, I get heavy and my metabolism sucks to go on top of that. Like, just because your upper body is defined, you got to keep going. You see your upper body and you look great. Okay, cool. That's not going to win you a show. I mean, you got to keep keep nosediving the calories, the diet. If you got to cycle carbs, but yeah, you don't stop once the upper body's coming in, and you shouldn't rely on gear to get you there either. It's all diet really.
Okay.
So it's not just pushing it. It's because pushing it is, you know, that's at a pretty high level, but then there's pushing it. There's
a difference. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a difference.
What's the difference?
It's just that extra, it's that next level.
Yeah.
You know, I love that. Well, first I'll say that I completely agree that the dieting component has to be looked at first. Are you going far enough? But I will say this. I think that, and I'm going to try to back this up with an explanation that I think will make sense. Most women struggle. Well, they get lean upper body first, obviously, and they struggle with lower body, primarily because of the testosterone to estrogen balance. As an example, guys tend to be leaner in their lower body because we have a different testosterone to estrogen ratio. Excuse me, I have to clear my throat. And that's why we tend to be, it's almost like taking a woman and flip-flopping. Like, women are not going to be as hard in their lower body because of higher estrogen, lower testosterone. And guys, for the most part, if you take diet out of the equation, obviously dieting is a huge component, but I'm just saying from a hormonal standpoint, when you see women who have spent time, years with gear use, they tend to get to the point where they can balance out that definition or that conditioning from the upper body to the lower body much better. I do think that there's a hormonal component to that, and I think it takes time. I'm going to use an example of Heather Grace. And the reason I'm going to do that is because I've known Heather for years. Living in Denver, I saw her come from pretty much nothing and when she started, and years later, of course, turning pro. And I think that she sets a pretty high standard for conditioning, balanced conditioning, balanced muscularity, things like that. I cannot and will not speak to her gear use and that sort of thing because that's not my place. But I'm going to assume that everybody else would assume that at that level, there has been use over the years that has contributed to significantly helping her condition to balance out. An example would be you can push, let's say someone isn't pushing hard enough with their diet. They push harder, they're already lean, and maybe even ready to go upper body, but they're not lower body, and I'm talking about a woman. Mm-hmm. And they push harder, and they're able to bring their legs in. That can happen. But when they haven't spent much time in the hormonal arena with gear and things like that, they will, even when they get their legs better condition, they're still going to have that imbalance from the upper body to the lower body. And sometimes it can hurt that client on stage because then they get feedback that they're just so shredded up, or that their upper body is so shredded that it's not balanced. But it's like, what do you do as a trainer? I mean, you know, you have to push them to the point where, you know, you're trying to get their legs as conditioned as possible. I think over time, as that testosterone to estrogen ratio, I don't want to say sustained, but years of using gear and altering that estrogen to testosterone ratio, I think that does help over time to help balance out conditioning from the upper body to the lower body. Yes, there's other variables. Clearly the diet is a huge variable. The other component is, are they muscular enough in their lower body? Are they carrying enough muscle? There are other variables, but I think I've seen it happen so many times because I'm old. I've been around for a long time. I've seen some of these competitors who get to the high level, and I've known them and seen them when they started. And it could be argued, and I accept this, that the evolution of dieting and getting back to that set point of leanness is easier the second time around and the third time around. And you get back to that set point or that place where you had gotten the first time, and then you can, you know, push past that. And yeah, it's a evolutionary process. I get that. But I do still believe that there is a component to, basically a component that is hormonal, that the more time that the body, a female's body has to, that where they have an altered testosterone to estrogen ratio, I do think it helps over time with conditioning. I really do. which is not to say that Nikki doesn't think that. All I'm saying is, and I don't want to take away from the dieting component that she's talking about, because I believe that to be absolutely true too. I think that a lot of people, they aren't able to push as hard as they need to. Hmm. But I think when it comes to, again, that imbalance that you see in competitors, and you see it with people who go to a high level. And that's why I use Heather Grace as an example. You know, she worked her ass off, you know, 10 years ago, but she didn't get to that point of conditioning where she was balanced until I think she spent years, and I'm being presumptive again, because what I do or don't know, I wouldn't talk publicly, you know, about anyway, because that's not my business. But yeah. I'm using Heather as an example just so someone can relate to a very, very balanced physique that has attained a very high level, you know, in the competition arena. And I think there's a lot of people like Heather that I know I've seen myself from being in the industry for so long that I do think that there's a connection to continued hormonal manipulation that does play a part in balancing out that condition from the upper body to the lower body over time.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. Like every contest I've done, I've gotten leaner. I've used, you know, after my first year, I've used gear throughout. And even in the off season, my fat distribution changes. Like I think after the last contest, my legs stayed leaner longer. And then I started almost taking on like a guy's body where I put more in the middle, and my butt and my legs were staying lean. So I was adding it in the middle instead of in my lower body. So yeah, I agree 100%. Like I was able to push harder with diet because of gear. I was able to push harder with cardio. I was stronger. I was more muscular. And then the hormonal component. Yeah. I definitely think that, I don't know if it's the estrogen receptors are gone or just carrying less fat there. It's definitely, I have a different body than I did 10 years ago for sure.
Right.
Yeah. Makes sense to me, guys. One more question here. And then everything else we had, we will catch next time. Hey guys, long time listener, first question. On last episode, you guys covered a lot about GH, and Skip keeps mentioning whether you're a responder or not. What's the best way to tell, aside from the obvious, like fat loss and skin benefits? This is my first time with GH. I'm only 27 years old, and I'm running 4 units of generics per day. I ask because I have been on for almost 3 months, and I haven't noticed much other than amazing sleep and vivid dreams. My latest labs showed my IGF levels around 500, so obviously I'm converting it. But my blood sugar is getting up there, and also TSH levels are high. I may try the every other day dosing, like you guys have talked about, reduced sides, but if testing IGF levels enough to know, but is testing IGF levels enough to know if you're a responder to growth?
No.
How do you know you're a responder, Skip?
It's a very, very tough question sometimes to answer because it just takes time. See, and the problem too is we see ourselves every day. Mm. So with something that has such a subtle impact over time on how we look, I always tell clients, unless you're going to, when you first start wanting to use growth and you want to find out if you respond, I always tell them to 2 things primarily. Number one, use farm grade growth because, and it sounds like in this case, the guy got some good generics because his IGF levels are up. You can tell by the sides that he's having that it's probably good shit, good for him. That doesn't always happen. And I always tell people, spend the money on farm grade and run it for 6 months, because if you don't notice, you can't say, I see a result, a positive result, then you're probably not responding terribly well to it at 6 months. Hmm. But again, how do you gauge that? That's difficult. I mean, it sounds kind of simplistic, but if you can take pictures and the rest of the variables from training to nutrition and everything else, if they're relatively consistent, which they should be, then if you can't see a difference after 6 months or you're not sure, you're probably not responding to it terribly well. Hmm. Blood levels being higher does not mean that that's not a black and white answer as to whether you respond. Yeah. It's a black and white answer as to whether it's real. and whether it had, you know, because obviously if you don't have the blood work to show the numbers are actually there and affecting, you know, the IGF levels, then that's a, you know, that's a no-brainer. But to be able to actually gauge, it is difficult. I think that, you know, as you know, your top responders are your top athletes, you know, your better competitors, they're going to, you know, jump 15 pounds and they don't ask the question, gee, I wonder if I responded. When you're questioning whether you responded after 6 months and you spent the money and you got good shit and you've got the blood panels to back it up, I would say you're probably not responding terribly well to it. Then it becomes a question of, are you responding well enough that you want to continue to spend the money, deal with the sides, or kick it to the curb? Mm. And that's an individual, kind of a personal decision that you have to make.
Mm. Fair enough. Nikki, do you have any thoughts on this one?
No, I mean, I've used growth before, and actually I just started back up on it recently. Unfortunately, I was in prep taking stuff, so I can't really tell what did what at any given time, unfortunately. Yeah. Like, I know I hyper-respond to certain compounds, so I know that I need to get off or reduce. But yeah, other than, like, you know, getting the typical, like, feeling the hands or, I don't know, like, I've noticed that maybe my face clearing up a little bit. But that could be diet-related. So I'm not too sure. But I just got back on, so I'll be interested to see, you know, in the next 6 months of – you know, getting back into training a little bit more, eating better, if it has a significant effect on me.
What do you think about growth in general for females? I mean, I know we're dealing with something here that's not going to be, you know, related to testosterone, so you're not going to deal with those same side effects, I'd think. What are your thoughts overall?
I think it's a great compound to use as far as healing and general health and I think it's just one of those compounds that you can't go wrong with. It's extremely expensive and hopefully you have a source to get pharma grade. But other than that, I think it could be a great adjunct to a gear cycle and helping with growth in a way that you're not going to get negative sides. So it goes back to what I said about having a few compounds that are at lower dosages that all work together to get the desired result. So less sides and then more benefit from it.
All right.
Let me ask you this, Nikki. I got a quick question on this. Sure. And I will tell you what I have seen, and I wonder if you've seen the same thing or not. With women and growth hormone use, I have tend to see that it thins out their faces, almost maybe even from a collagen standpoint, where a woman's face will get a little bit more, for lack of a better word, bony.
Yeah.
Versus a male's face, and I'll use like Phil Heath as an example. He can be shredded and he'll still have a round face. Now, there are other factors, obviously. You know, it could be anything from his gear use to, but I have seen this happen so many times that I wondered, because S2H, or Bob, depending on how you know him.
Or Scott.
or Scott for that matter. Yeah, him and I tend to, I think we disagree on this a little bit because he hasn't seen that before. I wondered if you had seen the same thing. It just kind of takes away the fullness from women's faces much more so than males. Have you noticed that or no?
You know what? I've taken it myself and I only have one client and I just put on it. So I honestly have no idea. For me, as I've gotten leaner with each show, my face has shown that. But I don't think it was directly from the growth. That's an interesting observation, I would imagine. So it actually takes collagen away?
Or? Well, I'm only questioning if that has some, if that might have something to do with it. As an example, when that same woman goes back into their off season, and let's say they have a body fat level that might be consistent with any other off season, I found that their face is still leaner at that point. And that's why I question if it has something to do with collagen. I'm reaching on the collagen component.
Oh, interesting. I don't know. You know, I'm trying to diet now and hopefully I stay there and I don't blow back up. Not for anything in particular. We're going on vacation. So I don't know. I'll take note of that and see if I notice anything in myself, but, and the girl that I just put on. So I'll be looking out for that, but I've never heard of that or seen that before.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see if you notice that. And by the way, dieting is over. I'm gonna fuck it up. Forget it. Comedy is timing, so I just fucked it up.
Yeah, I believe that growth increases collagen, so I don't know if it would be that.
I know. That's what I thought was kind of odd, too, because it seems counterintuitive. I completely agree. So that's why I'm glad you asked. That's why I'm glad you asked, though, Nikki, because I don't want to give the impression that's what it does. I have just questioned if there's something there, because I have seen it so many times, and I just think to myself, damn, that's odd.
Man,
why would it have a different impact based on gender?
unless their heads are getting bigger.
That could be too. Yeah.
I think mine did a little bit. Like, on those, I put sunglasses on. I'm like, this doesn't fit quite the same. But I've never taken huge dosages before, so I could just be out of my mind. But
yeah. All right, guys. Well, we are out of time. Nikki, I know you guys you trained today already. What did you train?
We did legs today, and I'm in my bed, stretched out, and trying to recover, and they hurt.
Nice. How long is a leg workout for you? And did you train with David?
Yeah, we do train together. Actually, we've always trained together. There's been a few stretches in the past 10 years that we have not, but we are training together right now. And, just an hour. We're not planning on competing anytime soon. When we moved to Rhode Island, it was really difficult for us. We didn't have a schedule. We did everything online. So things just didn't really mesh well for us as far as trying to keep up with the lifestyle. So we finally got things down well and training together and eating right. And we're focusing on health more than anything and trying to get some muscle back from what we've lost over the last year or so. So we're just, focused on training 4 or 5 days a week for about an hour. And that's about it. Just to enjoy it again and, not go two balls to the wall and hurt ourselves, because we do have some injuries that we're trying to make sure that we don't exacerbate.
Hell yeah. Skip, what about you? What are you training today?
Probably my left infraspinatus, right intercostal, and maybe serratus, and left and right soleus. That's I don't do legs on Monday. That's way too hardcore.
Yeah, right?
I was off for 4 days. I ate scones from Panera. I got to break back in here. No,
I have plenty of fuel for legs.
I am definitely full. Yes, to the point where when I drop this water by, say, Wednesday, so I'll be cramping in my calves while I'm training chest.
Right.
It'll be beautiful. Yeah. I'm on a push today, so I will go in and I got my first cardio session here. When we're done, and then I'll do cardio again. I'm on a double cardio kick here for the next 2 weeks anyway. So, and I was not something I just added in, but. I got to clean up a mess.
Did you, have you gotten on the scale? Did you gain a few pounds or?
Yeah, no, I walked right by that scale. Yeah. Flipped it off, and it flipped me off, which I thought, God. Yeah. No, I'm not going to until later in the week. Honestly, there's no reason to. I'm waterlogged, full as hell, and I'll check where I am at the end of the week.
Yeah, you know what you did.
Yeah. I mean, it's very clear. It was very... The decision was very, matter of fact. So, yeah, I'll know by the end of the week. I'll drop the water relatively quick. And, clearly there was damage done. I mean, I'm not going to bullshit anybody. I I've got work to do, but I'll be in a much better place by the end of the week.
I'm sure you will, man. All right, guys. Nikki, if people want to reach out to you, where can they find you?
You guys can just email me directly. My email address is Nikki, Nikki, .djt, as in David Johnson Training, @gmail.com. We have teamwarriorwithin.com as well, and Team Warrior Within on Facebook, and Nikki, I don't know if I'm on, Adriana is my first name, so I accidentally sign up everything under that name. So Facebook's Adriana Johnston, and Instagram is Nikki DJT Style, I believe.
All right. Well, I will tag you guys in all the posts that we put out for this. Thank you for both being with me. Nikki, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you so much, guys. I had a blast. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it was great having you. Very, it was
yes,
nice to meet
you. Yes, thank you. Yeah, you too.
All right. For another episode of Blood, Sweat, and Gear, I'm with Nikki Johnston and Skip Hill. I'm Scott McNally, and we will see you next time.
Homies all standing around just hanging. Some dope dealing, some gang banging. We decide to roll and we deep. See a nigga on dates and we creep. Real slow, and before you know, I have my shotgun pointed in the window. He got scared and hit the gate.
Radio.